Hello and welcome back to the Go Home Show podcast, and we've got a special episode for you today as we review last night's Clash of Champions pay-per-view. I'm Michael Henson and I'm joined by Synergy's finest member, Chris Anderson, who will run through the results and our highlights from WWE's 11th pay-per-view of the year. I've had less than 5 hours sleep, so let's get into it. Yeah, we'll jump straight in. And the pre-show. So before the show even started, we heard news that two of the matches had actually been pulled from the card. They were the women's tag match where Shayna Baszler and Nia Jax were against the Riot Squad. And we also heard news that we'd lost Nikki Cross versus Bayley. I've not yet heard why it was. Have you seen anything crush on your late night?
No, there's lots of rumours flying around social media and a lot of speculation, but nothing confirmed. But the Raw Tag Team titles are getting addressed on Raw tonight.
Nice. Well, that led us to only having one match on the pre-show, which was Cesaro and Shinsuke Nakamura versus Lucha House Party. Now, I have in my notes that originally I was annoyed that this match wasn't on the main show. I thought it should have been the Street Profits match that was on the pre-show, and this match should have been on the main show. However, having seen the show, I do agree with where it's placed. I think this match was really, really good, though. I think they have very, very good natural chemistry. I think this is a very, very strong way and a very good bit of free wrestling to give out on YouTube. I really like this match. Crush, what did you think?
Yeah, I really enjoyed this match. It was just over 10 minutes. I found it a bit weird that they didn't really touch on the breakup of Lucha House Party, because obviously it's been teased a week about Kalisto splitting up. So it's Kalisto and Lindsay Dorado, Grand Metalik on the outside. But there was no real hint to that. But like Chris said, when you consider it in terms of main card, you can see why it was placed there. The point I want to make is how good Kalisto and Cesaro are working together. There's two really nice spots in the match, high flying spots from Kalisto as always. So yeah, go check that out. As Chris said, it's free wrestling on YouTube.
Yeah, and then we moved into the main show and we kicked off with a match that I thought was going to be way later down the card. However, I do agree with its placement, having seen the match, because it was really good. This was the Jeff Hardy, AJ Styles, Sami Zayn Intercontinental Championship ladder match, with probably the most unique finish I've seen to a ladder match for quite some time. It was also a very, very hard-hitting match, which is good to see from Sami Zayn as well, because obviously he's been on the shelf for so long. Even before his kind of six-month hiatus, he was barely taking bumps. He won the title at Mania against Daniel Bryan in a match where he barely took any bumps. Kind of just hit one big boot and that was it, 1, 2, 3. This match was incredible. The finish was really good. From watching it live, Crush, what did you think?
Mate, honestly, when it was announced on the pre-show that this was coming up first, I was buzzing, like actually buzzing, because I knew it would be so good. And as I tweeted last night on the Go Home Show podcast, at Go Home Show Pod, if you're not following already, that this is a match of the night contender and match of the year contender. And I absolutely loved it. Like, Jeff Hardy is mental. He is mental, but in a good mental. I love him for it. Like, there's so many good spots. Like, Jeff jumped into a ladder. It broke the support. Corey compared it to almost like a Venus flytrap when it caught him. Sami Zayn had two hard ladder bumps. AJ took an exploder suplex on the ladder. AJ launched a ladder at Sami Zayn like a javelin. Like, it was one of the small ladders, like the Hornswoggle ladders. He just launched it like a javelin from outside the ring to take him down. AJ and Jeff both landed on the top rope. There was this really bad spot with Jeff where, I can't remember who it was, Sami and AJ, but they were trying to push him over and it was going into the turnbuckle. So he like slithered over the top of it. And as he got to the other side, it went down, but the ladder lay flat. So it like hit the top turnbuckle. So he had a bump there and then he flipped onto the apron and it like he landed badly, but luckily he was all right after that. Then he does the swanton bomb off top of the ladder through a ladder that was bouncing on the ring apron and the announce table.
That was the cleanest swanton bomb I've seen for so long. Jeff's kind of adjusted how he's done his swanton. So the person taking it takes more rather than Jeff and his, I imagine, completely destroyed spine taking the brunt of it. This was such a good, clean swanton bomb. Sami Zayn took every inch of this. Mm-hmm. I think it might have been the best spot of the show.
Yeah, I agree. And then we go on to the best part of the match. And as Corey Graves said on commentary, AJ and Jeff Hardy were playing checkers. Sami was playing chess. So Sami gets out this two pairs of handcuffs from his jacket. He goes to the outside. Obviously, Jeff's got the stretched ear. He puts the handcuffs through there, attaches that to a ladder. So Jeff has to, like, he's literally connected to the ladder. Then he goes in the ring and tries to put on AJ. There's a bit of back and forth. And then as AJ climbs the ladder, he puts the other handcuff on him, so Sammy's attached to AJ, so he can't go anywhere. So AJ tries to fireman lift him to get up the ladder. Jeff gets into the ring with the ladder attached to his ear, and then this is where Sami Zayn is a genius. He gets a key from inside his mouth unlocks the handcuffs on him, attaches AJ to the ladder, so he's just stuck there, he can't go anywhere, gets up, gets the titles. And I don't know if this, he wins the titles or if he retains the titles, I'm not too sure, but yeah, Sami Zayn won the first match of the night on the main card.
And I think this is the right booking as well, because I think Sami needed the belts more than the other two. Obviously, AJ Styles is a multi-time WWE champion. Jeff Hardy has been around for so long. He's forever going to be over. He doesn't need a belt to kind of legitimize himself. Whereas with Sami being away for 6 months, he needs the belts more than those two by a long, long way. I think this was the correct decision. It was a really good match. Yeah, I have a lot of time for this one. I think this was about as good as WWE could have done with this match.
And yeah, then we go into a backstage segment where, unfortunately, R-Truth lost his 24/7 title. Obviously, he was episode 7 guest, so go listen to that as well. So he's walking around backstage. He's been on the pre-show in a disguise because he thinks he can pan for gold at Gold Rush, because obviously that was the strap line. So again, great comedy from him. But he accidentally gets into the referee's room where Drake Verts, or Drake Younger as he's known, is there with another ref. And then he's like, oh, I'm in the wrong territory. Backs out. And then you see Drew Gulak stretching behind him. Don't know why he's stretching instead of a match, but hey-ho. And then, yeah, he rolls him up and wins the belt, and I was a bit gutted. But then we move on to the next match, which I believe Chris will speak in detail about, and that is Zelina Vega against Asuka for the Raw Women's title.
So I had an idea that we should always kind of give one match to watch, and this was going to be my one match to watch, because I think the expectations for this match were very, very low. Originally, it was designed to be in the pre-show, so that kind of had its own stigma that came along with it. Obviously, you were expecting Asuka to go over strong, which she did. I kind of felt that this was just going to be a bit of a house show match, or even like a Raw match, that kind of thing. Actually, they did a really, really good job of keeping Asuka very, very strong and actually showing how good Zelina is as a singles competitor. Obviously, she's been a manager now for years and years with Andrade back in NXT, and then Andrade and Angel Garza in the main roster. They worked the match very well. It was a very, very simple story they told of Zelina trying to work Asuka's left arm, Asuka going for the Asuka lock. For me, the finish to this was exactly what it needed to be, in that it showed Zelina as a dangerous technical wrestler. She goes for a couple of very, very good kind of technical pins. And then Asuka, as they were saying throughout it on commentary, has the power advantage. Asuka essentially yeets Zelina out of a pin, straight into the Asuka lock, quick tap out. This was a very, very good match. I think it was only 7 minutes in total, give or take. But actually, all 7 of those minutes meant something. If you get a chance to watch just one match from this show and you've only got 10 minutes to do it, go for this match, because you'll just see good wrestling where both wrestlers end up stronger than when they started.
So as Chris said, finish was perfect in my opinion as well. Obviously it shows Asuka's dominance, but also shows that Zelina can work and obviously can continue the storyline because of the post-match attack, which leads us into the next match, where it was Bobby Lashley against Apollo Crews for the United States title. This match was fairly short from what I expected. It was about 8 minutes long. But again, it's telling the story of the Hurt Business against Apollo Crews. Obviously, Cedric Alexander turned against them. He wasn't in the corner of Lashley. It was Shelton Benjamin, MVP. Ricochet was in Crews' corner. Some really nice spots in here. The superplex off the top rope by Lashley on Crews. Crews goes for a frog splash, gets a close 2 count, but then Lashley locks in the Hurt Lock, and yeah, there's no way he's getting out of that. Bobby Lashley picked up the win to retain his title.
I assume this will end the feud between Apollo Crews and Ricochet versus the Hurt Business. Lashley winning clean, middle of the ring, very quick tap. Doesn't feel like there's any way back for this. I think with the news that there's a draft coming, Ricochet and Apollo Crews seem to be prime contenders for me to move over to Raw. But we'll have to wait and see. I think the match was good. It was probably the match I was least impressed with throughout the show. But I also think with where it was placed on the card, it was kind of set up to be that. I think you had such a hot start with the ladder match. You've got some comedy with the 24/7 stuff. The Zelina Vega match obviously being, I think, better than was expected. This had what you'd expect from its place in the card. And I think going from there, when you move into tag match with Angel Garza and Andrade versus the Street Profits, which was, in my opinion, a very, very good match with an unfortunate finish, this Lashley and Apollo Crews match was kind of set up to be what would be the toilet break match, if that makes sense.
So yeah, going into that Angel Garza Andrade versus Street Profits match, obviously they'd split up a few weeks ago, then they won the number one contender match, but they started working well together, some really nice work. They were getting each other in and out of the ring. I think they were targeting Montez Ford at the time. Some really nice double teams. A pop-up to a kick, there was a drop kick from the corner, knee into the face on the ropes after Garza set up Ford again for Andrade. And then we get the hot tag. Angelo Dawkins comes in. He takes out both of them. A really nice spot, which I've always enjoyed. I remember seeing it on the Indies a few times, but then I saw Mustafa Ali do it on Seth Rollins. And I think it was the Raw after Mania 33 when I saw it. I popped massive before. It's the Spanish fly off the top rope by Angel Garza on Montez Ford. But that's when it gets slightly weird. So then Dawkins comes in. He hits a spine buster. He goes for the cover. Andrade kicks out. Commentator saying he's kicked out. But then the ref's counted three. So everyone's like, whoa, what's going on here? Everyone's confused. Like Twitter's like, oh, ref botch. But then when people have looked back, the ref has thrown up the X for Angel Garza. And some have said he might have done it on the Spanish fly, but I'm not too sure where he did it. But as he goes to tag in Andrade, you can see he's properly struggling. So some thought it was his quad, but I've read a report on What Culture this morning that it's actually his hip, so it's not as bad as expected. But yeah, not the best ending to that match, an unfortunate ending, as it was going really well up until then.
Yeah, no, it was a very, very good match. It was a very, very good tag match. And it was a match that I was not excited for at all, because we've seen this match, I think, about 17 times since the turn of the year. But they brought out new stuff. Again, the Angel Garza and Andrade split up, they're back together, and then they work so perfectly as a team. That kind of felt like we were just being expected to forget that they had a tiff a couple of weeks ago. But, I mean, it's the WWE. This happens quite often. We can get over it. It was such a good match that I didn't mind it. Yeah, I think it was on the knee after the Spanish fly when he got injured, but I'm not 100% certain on it. But you could see instantly in the way he goes down and the way the match was going that he was injured. They make the tag. He rolled straight out. You can actually see on one of the shots, you see the doctors kind of rush around the back of the ring to go check on Garza. I think there is also, with Andrade especially, there can be a language communication issue, which might have led to the kicking out when he wasn't supposed to kick out. Or he may have been thinking, actually, if I kick out of this, they can still go and hit the frog splash that we see from Montez Ford. And is probably one of the best frog splashes in wrestling at the minute. We can go to the finish that way. The only issue I had with it after the match is that Montez Ford and Angelo Dawkins are baby faces, and they're very energetic baby faces. They both just looked annoyed after the match. And when you're trying to sell the idea that a win's a win, I think they kind of need to be aware. Even if they're frustrated at the ending to the match, they need to be aware they're baby faces. They should be happy. They're full of energy. Forget everything else. If you've got discussions to have backstage afterwards, then have those backstage afterwards. But you know, you've got to, if you're all about that smoke and about your solo red cups and that kind of thing, just instantly you win, be happy, be energetic, and then anything has to be said after the match, say it at the back. Just go from there.
And then we go on to a highlight of the show again, which is our close personal friend, R-Truth, regaining his 24/7 title. Drew likes doing an interview backstage. I think it's with Caleb Braxton. He's talking about maybe the up getting drafted in the draft. Truth comes up behind him with a ref, gets him, and he's now a 40-time 24/7 title. Congratulations, R-Truth, from me and Chris.
Yeah, never doubted him. I think this was a good little way of having some comedy in there. I very much liked your point earlier that why Drew Gulak was in full gear stretching when he knows he doesn't have a match. I have no clue, but I love the fact that he was. And I think, yeah, it's a nice, easy bit of a bit of backstage comedy without really impeding on the show.
And then, as Chris touched on earlier, fortunately, Nikki Cross wasn't medically cleared to compete. So Bayley didn't have a match. So she came out talking about an open challenge. She gets a ref in saying, oh, Kramer winning by default. And then that's when we get the old switcheroo, and Asuka comes out for double duty to challenge her. And it was confirmed to be a title match. And I was thinking, well, like, they're not going to make Bayley drop the belt now, are they? But very clever story they're telling again. Bayley gets disqualified for hitting Asuka with a chair. She retains the title. And then Chris, that's when we see a nice return.
Yeah, it would be interesting to know if this was always the plan and they were going to do a similar match with Nikki versus Bayley, or if they kind of very quickly pivoted, got Sasha in to return and attack her old best friend and now her greatest foe. But I thought this was really, really nicely done. I think Sasha sold it well in that she was still injured. It wasn't like she came back with a neck brace on. And she didn't kind of show that she was 100% fit. She was selling the neck a lot, just even when she was getting offense in. But I think this, if it's a last-minute match, we've got to just throw Asuka, Bayley, and Sasha into something and make something out of nothing. I think this was a really, really good way to have still a very, very strong segment of the show without any of them looking weak or without ruining the momentum for anyone else on the show.
Yeah, and again, it leads on to further storylines. Obviously, we've got Hell in a Cell coming up soon. So I saw a few rumors on Twitter that we'll do Bayley and Sasha at Hell in a Cell. But obviously, plans could change and they might completely swerve us this Friday night on SmackDown.
I'm going to jumping very quickly, just out of interest, what is the next pay-per-view? Is it Hell in a Cell or is it Survivor Series? Because we can't be far off.
Well, officially, it is NXT TakeOver 31, which is next Sunday on the WWE Network. But yeah, Hell in a Cell, October 25th.
Very nice. I'm very excited for that. I would personally wouldn't do Sasha versus Bayley yet. I think if you do it in Hell in a Cell as well, there's not really anywhere for it to go from there. I would kind of tease it a little bit, but then say you can't get Sasha cleared and they can go from there.
So yeah, that moves on to the last two matches, which I think was just perfect for storytelling. And the first one was Drew McIntyre, our great UK champion, up against Randy Orton in an ambulance match. And I absolutely love this match. McIntyre gets on top from the bell, then Orton gets a bit of an advantage from kicking the rope into McIntyre into DDT. He's lining up the punt, which obviously we've seen him break Drew's jaw in recent weeks. And then we get this swerve. There's someone out. He's in a mask. He's grabbed his leg. He can't move. He pulls it down. And it's the Big Show. It's the Big Show from the Big Show's Big Show on Netflix.
Oh, I'm sorry to jump in, but Big Show wearing a mask was my favourite thing. Because he came, because he had a black hoodie on as well, didn't he? And so from the first camera shot,
or a vest.
The first shot, he came out and was like, oh, Retribution getting involved. And then I was like, and then it pulled to a wider shot and I was like, oh no, he's 7 foot tall and he's bald. Why is he wearing, why was he wearing a mask?
But like, also a big baby face.
Just looking at him like,
his beard off.
No clue who this guy is. Can't figure out who this 7 foot behemoth is. Oh, it was great. But sorry, continue, Crush.
But yeah, again, it plays into the part of the whole Randy Orton Legend Killer storyline. So obviously, he had stuff with Big Show in the past, and that continued throughout the match. So yeah, he got chokeslammed through an announce table. Then we go up to the ramp. We get into towards the ambulance. There's back and forward. Then the red chair with an ambulance sign on, and the crutches start coming out. Orton's using them for his advantage. Both men were inside the ambulance. They fell out of it. There was a nice headbutt from Drew. There's a really grim shot where Orton's got like spit coming out of him after that because it hit him so hard. Then McIntyre sent up for the Claymore. Orton jumps into the driver's seat and Drew takes the door off. And I was like, his knees must be made out of steel because if I did that, I won't be able to walk ever again. Then we get into the backstage area. We come around to like a sort of catering table. And again, the storyline comes back full circle as Christian attacks in them. But obviously, he got took out by Orton. It keeps going back with the forwards. They're on the front of the ambulance this time. There's a thumb to the eye, and Orton smashes Drew through the windscreen. And I did a really great tweet at Go Home Show Pod. I was like, glass breaks, but no Stone Cold appearance. Great banter for 2 o'clock in the morning, it would have been at that time. Yeah, struggling at that point. There's blood on the back of the Drew from the impact. Then we get onto the roof. He's clinging onto the roof, and that devilish Orton stamps on his left hand and then crunches his right hand with the other foot to make him fall off. And then we're thinking, right, what's going to happen next? And of course, the legend that is Shawn Michaels comes out from the back, sweet chin musics him on top of the ambulance and pushes him off. And that's 3 of the 5 legends that he's taken out. And I'm thinking, right, you've got Edge and Ric Flair left. Like, what are they going to do? Is like Ric Flair going to come out and put him in a figure four leg lock? Or is Edge going to spear him through the ambulance doors? We get one of them, but not in the way I wanted it. We have like a fireman lift trying to get in the back of the ambulance. Then Orton camps it in the RKO. One door's closed. You're thinking, no, he's going to lose the title. As he's about to shut the second, Drew stops at the last minute. We get a thumb in the eye and then we get a claymore. Orton's in, but Drew's like, no, we're not finishing there. This is time for payback for breaking my jaw. Orton's flat out on the back of the ambulance. He gets punted. Drew locks the ambulance away. And then we get the Nature Boy, the GOAT, Ric Flair, driving the ambulance away as Drew McIntyre retains his title. What did you think of the match, Chris?
What I love from this is that you were annoyed that Ric Flair didn't come out and start styling and profiling at the age of 71.
It'd been perfect.
You were there like, well, what? It would have been great, but he is still 71. I'm fairly certain Edge is still injured as well. And you're annoyed that both of them didn't put all that aside. And
not annoyed, I was hoping for that, like 2:30 hop.
Yeah, I get you. So my views on this match, actually, I was worried about this match because I'm a huge Drew McIntyre fan. Randy Orton is obviously one of the best of all time. But ambulance matches and like big gimmick matches are difficult when you've got two very slow, methodical, powerful kind of wrestlers. And especially when there's no crowd because like everything takes their time. It's a bit like the Edge and Randy Last Man Standing match at WrestleMania where there was no crowd at all. And it was very slow and it's kind of difficult to get into. Like you said, obviously it's different for an American audience, but for us as Brits, at 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning, it's hard to get through those. But actually, bringing back Christian, bringing back Big Show, bringing back Shawn Michaels, and having Ric Flair there was exactly what you needed to kind of give you that natural pop from home, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. I especially enjoyed Shawn Michaels hitting the switch in music and then pushing Randy off with a bit of a Kobe Bryant kind of flick of the wrist and a swish to go through and push him off the ambulance. I think Randy might be another draft candidate. I don't think there's much left for him to do on Raw. I think with this, with the punt at the end as well, I think that's kind of a final nail in the coffin of this feud. Drew's gone over twice now. I can't see them being like, yep, we'll do it a third time. So I'd imagine we'll see Randy go across to SmackDown, which I'm all for. I think that'll work very, very nicely, but we'll have to wait and see.
And that leads us perfectly into main event, Roman Reigns against Jey Uso for the Universal Championship. We had the honour to speak to Jay on Friday. So yeah, go check that interview out either on any podcast app that you use or on our YouTube channel. And Chris, I've spoke a lot throughout this whole show, so I'm letting you take this one.
So this match, again, I was very, very excited for, but I didn't know what way they're going to go. We did have some hope we might see the old Kevin Nash finger poke of doom, see Jey Uso lie down, 1, 2, 3, and we get kind of a new faction forming. We got probably the exact opposite of this, and it was actually very similar to Brock Lesnar matches that we saw when he was the champion, in that it's very, very, very champion dominant. So we used to see it with Brock, but this time obviously we see it with Roman. Roman was very, very dominant early on. Jey got a little bit here and there. Obviously, his shine at the start was he hit like an up and over in the corner, a little bit of dance. He dabbed on Roman. You kind of see Jey being the quicker, more entertaining wrestler. Roman Reigns cut him off with a big, essentially a Superman clothesline, which was weird, but also very cool.
Part of his new offense as well.
Part of his new offense. I'm going to come back to that in a bit because I did have one, I had one gripe with this match, but we'll come back to it. Jey gets a good little kind of hoax spot comeback in there, hits a Samoan drop for a two count. Again, though, we see Roman Reigns get back on top. I think it was with a Superman punch. And we built and we built and we built. We did see a good comeback from Jey Uso, where it was a couple of suicide dives, led into an enziguri, and then into a big crossbody and a super kick, I think. So this is where my gripe comes in. Jey Uso is set up, I think he's set up for the kind of the old butt splash in the corner, wasn't he? Mm-hmm. And then he hits what I think is a rough rider, essentially, a running leg lariat, or a running leg drop, however you want to call it.
An elevated now, vertical leg drop, as someone described it in commentary.
Yeah, it's a push, it's a rough rider. In this situation, there are two moves that he would always go for in this situation, which is the Superman punch or the spear. The spear is his finish. That's what he goes home with. Jey Uso is mounting a real comeback here. Why would he not just hit a spear? Like, it was very cool to see such a big guy hit this move, and it's very impressive. But in that situation, Reigns should just spear him. Like, psychology says Reigns should just spear him. I appreciate they were saving the spear for the end because they wanted to see, essentially, the murder of Jey Uso, which we'll go into. So from there, we see another little comeback. Jey Uso finally hits the splash from the corner. We see one, we see two. Reigns kicks out kind of awkwardly into what looked a bit like a low blow.
Yeah.
Now, dastardly, I was quite interested by this because I didn't think they'd want Reigns working, cheating to win because he doesn't need it in this match. He is the heel, obviously. He's big champion. He's got Paul Heyman as his manager. He cold cocks Jey Uso on the last SmackDown. He's going to win. We know he's going to be dominant. Him low-blowing to regain the advantage felt a bit contrived for me. Now, it could also have just been, and I think this is what they're trying to play into, is that Reigns will be able to shrug this off saying, no, it's just kicking out and your nuts happen to be in the way. I found that a bit interesting. We then go into spear upon spear and we have Roman Reigns essentially demanding that Jey Uso call him the Tribal Chief. And that only once he calls him the Tribal Chief, the head of the family, the head honcho, will he allow Jey Uso to escape by simply pinning him. Lots of punches to the face. Again, this was very, very Brock Lesnar-esque. We saw it, when was it? It was Brock Lesnar versus Randy Orton, for example, which it's a bit of a, it's a kind of famous moment now. It gives him a full potato forearm to the head. That kind of ground and pound, no mercy style. It's very Brock Lesnar-esque again, which I do find very interesting. But eventually, still, Jey Uso refuses. Jimmy Uso, the returning Jimmy Uso, comes back with a big knee brace on, saying to Jey, I'm going to throw in the towel. Jey begs him not to. Roman tells him to do it. It goes back and forth. Eventually, Roman loses patience, drags Jey Uso into the middle of the ring, just ground and pound, beating the living snot out of him. Jimmy Uso eventually throws in the towel, That's the end of the match. Comes into the ring, essentially has to throw his body on top of Jey Uso to stop Roman Reigns on this assault. And then Jimmy Uso calls Roman Reigns the big dog. He calls him the head honcho, the tribal chief. And we have this moment of Paul Heyman adorning the lei on top of the head of Roman Reigns as he stands over his two cousins. I really liked the match. I really liked the story told. It wasn't the match of the night for me, but I think it was the right thing to have as the main event, especially when you're building Reigns up to essentially be the new face of the company. I enjoyed it a lot. I felt the finish was a bit slow, but I think it helped not having a crowd in this situation because it was such a slow finish that live crowds can be a bit iffy with Roman Reigns, I think it's fair to say. It would have been interesting to see how this had gone with a crowd in. It was good. It was probably very, very good. And it was the right way to finish the show. It just dragged a little bit for me at the end. But what did you think, Crush? You were there. You were nearly there live in the Thunderdome.
Yeah, so I had a place in the Thunderdome. So my call time was 11:45 UK time. So around the kickoff show match. And as I tried again, it was like Thunderdome full. I tried like four times and I was like, ah, I'm not getting in. But me and Chris have been there for SummerSlam, so I'm fine with that. Yeah, I really enjoyed this. As I said earlier on the podcast, perfect storyline. Roman is a legit badass. He's got his new look. He's not wearing his vest to wrestling. He is absolutely jacked. He's a monster.
No new music, though. I'm sure he said there's new music coming.
Yeah, he definitely said there was new music, but we didn't get that. Maybe we'll get that soon. But yeah, no new music yet, but a new look. But yeah, really enjoyed it. Like, the storytelling on this is just incredible. Like, as Chris said, it's almost Brock Lesnar-like. Like, there was so much talk from Reigns. Like, you could tell they had a lot of mics around the ring, so it was picking up a lot of his talk, showing him to be this, like, new sort of look. Like, acknowledge me as your tribal chief. Telling Charles Robinson he won't have a job if he carries on trying to tell him what to do and stuff like that. It is the perfect character development for Roman Reigns. People have wanted this for so long, and this is what we need for Roman Reigns. And as Chris said before, the Jimmy Uso, it continues the family storyline, him coming out. He wasn't even called Jimmy by his brother. He was called John, which was his real name. There was more brutal beatdown, so that's when Jimmy chucks in the towel. And the line I've picked out is that Jimmy then gets in and says, "You're the chief, man. You're the tribal chief. That's what you want. You got it. You're the chief, Uso. Just chill." And again, as Chris said, he gets the... What was it called, Chris, when he put it over his head?
They call it a lei. It's a lei.
Yeah, that. Obviously, Jey wore that in his entrance. And yeah, Paul Heyman crowns Roman Reigns, the tribal chief, and that ended the show. So, Chris, over to you to send it home.
Well, I was going to say, very quickly, because we have whittled on a little bit, I will give a little bit of a summary here and say, if you haven't seen this yet, I really, really recommend this pay-per-view. It is very, very good. I genuinely believe it's probably the best they've had since there's been no crowds. I think Royal Rumble is still my favourite pay-per-view of the year, but it does have the handicap of having a live crowd there. If you get a chance, do check it out. The ladder match is very, very good. Make sure you watch that. Zelina Vega turned up for me. I was very impressed. It's worth watching the Raw men's tag team title match. It is a bit of a funky finish and it's a shame. But again, it's a cliche. It's not ballet. And then the two main events, the Randy and Drew McIntyre match is very, very good. You'll enjoy it immensely. And the storytelling from the main event of Roman Reigns versus Jey Uso is well worth the watch. Honestly, I think this is very, very good. This was where WWE should be, in my opinion, as a standard. I think their shows should be this good as a standard. But I am very, very excited to see where we go from here. We will be back tomorrow at the same time-ish. We'll be reviewing Monday Night Raw with all the fallout from Clash of Champions. We hope to hear you then. Don't forget as well to check out our YouTube page, Sporth Wrestling. You'll catch all our interviews on there. Our most recent one with Jey Uso. We've got one with R Truth on there. It's really, really good. Crusher is coming into his own as a sports journalist. We'll also be back on Thursday for the main show. Make sure you check that out with the full contingent of Will Brazier and Elliot Ames. Thank you very, very much for listening. Make sure you tweet us at Go Home Show Pod. We'll see you soon. Now let's go home.